From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. For the first time, Amazon recently sold more e-books than hard copies. This hour, we investigate the future of reading. My guests, Nancy Simpson Bryce, founder of The Book Vault, an independent bookstore in Oskaloosa, book conservator Gary Frost, and Jim McCoy of the University of Iowa Press. Do you own an iPad, a Kindle, a Nook? Is curling up with an electronic reader the same as curling up with a good book? How do you see the future of reading and the book? We want to hear from you this hour. First, a look at the news. Welcome to The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Great to have you with us over this sunny news hour, noon hour, should I say, also a noon hour when we discuss items of news. How about this for an item of news? You probably heard it a few weeks ago. For the first time, Amazon recently sold more e-books than hard copies. So this hour, we want to discuss the future of the printed book as the electronic information revolution marches on. And three people in our Iowa City studio to help us do that are Nancy Simpson Bryce. She's the founder and past manager of The Book Vault, an independent bookstore in Oskaloosa. Nancy, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Gary Frost, a book conservator for the University of Iowa Main Library. Gary, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And Jim McCoy with the University of Iowa Press, sales and marketing director. Jim, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Let's start off with you, Nancy, if we could. But first of all, I do want to reach out to our listeners to have you chime in. We want hopefully a lot of interaction this hour. Listeners to The Exchange, how have your reading habits changed with the electronic information revolution, the e-book revolution? E-book lovers out there, what is the attraction of these e-books? How do you use them? When do you use them rather than a printed book? Have you stopped buying as many printed books? And to you printed book lovers, what qualities does a book have that an e-book will never have, you think? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100, and our email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Nancy, let's start off with you as the founder, former manager of an independent bookstore in Oskaloosa. What have you noticed in the past 5 years about the impact of these e-readers on the way you the books you sell? What can you say about it?
Actually, we have noticed very little difference. If you let us take into account recession, our book sales have not fallen at all. Mm. And we have very few people asking for e-books, although we do offer them already. I think kind of like the recession and kind of like and fashion and everything, things filter down to the Midwest, and we get them about 6 months to a year later. So I look for our big interest boom to come in about a year.
So while we've seen this big wave, this shift in Amazon readers, more mm-hmm. e-books sold than regular books, that wave is still not hitting our shores quite yet.
Well, there are Kindle readers out there. Amazon certainly got the jump on everybody else as far as readers, but they're not really surfacing. Now, I was on a vacation last week in a different part of the country, and there I would say about 10% of the people, the vacationers, were using e-books.
Mm-hmm. Now, I see you brought an e-reader in to
yes,
our studio today. This is one I've not seen yet.
This is one of the new kids on the block. I think over the next couple of years, you're going to see so many new e-readers come out. And at the same time, I think you're going to see the price dropping. Mm-hmm. I waited until the price dropped to $149 before that was my point of, okay, now I'm going to get one. I have a Kobo, which is distributed in the States by Borders.com. And it is supposed to be a reader for book lovers. In other words, you don't have to be a big techie to use it. And indeed, there's only four buttons on the side and one on the bot, and then a little toggle at the bottom.
Oh, add the name Kobo to the others, iPad,
K-O-B-O.
Kindle, and Nook. Interesting. And you are selling these in your bookstore now?
We are not selling them yet. I wanted to make sure I knew what I was doing before I brought them into the store. One neat thing, I mean, I think we're going to see all kinds of gimmicks. This ebook has a quilted back so that you feel more like you're reading a
real
book. So
it is really
book.
Something you might want to curl up with. Interesting. Let's turn to Jim McCoy, Sales and Marketing Director for the University of Iowa Press. What have been the major ways you've seen this electronic revolution affecting the longstanding University of Iowa Press going back to what year?
We're 41 years old. Mm-hmm. To echo what Nancy said, really on the sales end, we're seeing very little impact. What's affecting us is knowing that the wave is coming and building in that infrastructure that we will need to build in to deal with the technology. And so right now we're really juggling the traditional demands of publishing
as
books.
Yeah, as Nancy alluded to, do you think this is a Midwestern thing?
No, I don't.
It's actually, why hasn't it affected you yet as a small press, a university press?
I would venture to say that it hasn't affected most publishers yet. Okay. I know the headline that Amazon put out there. And
the large publishers, the Simon Schuster, Random
anything.
House. Yeah, something like that.
Without saying anything derogatory about Amazon, who's a major
vending
partner that we love, I would just say that they're notoriously proprietary with their information, and these things can be sliced and diced.
Okay.
But it doesn't really reflect what I'm hearing from my peers, who even in best case scenario maybe seen one out of every four of a hot selling title sell in an ebook. Form, and that is abnormal. I think for most of us, it's less than 1% of our total sales.
Okay, so the wave is not here. You expect it's a wave or a tsunami?
I think it will be a series of waves. I think we're undergoing one now. I think we'll undergo another one this fall when Google Editions comes online. I think we'll undergo another over the next two or three years as publishers figure out how to market ebooks right now. Mm-hmm. Really, the retailer is doing the marketing, and retailer being Amazon and Apple and whoever else the major players are really responsible for doing the marketing. The publisher hasn't gotten involved yet. And then as publishers build in this technology – to their production workflows, you will see another wave. I almost said tsunami. another wave as publishers really learn. Right now, all we're doing is converting print books to ebooks.
We probably better say wave. You can surf on a wave, but
yeah.
A tsunami, you just run for the hills, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
The continuing
Gary Frost, yes, of the University of Iowa.
The continuing tsunami is our enthusiasm for screen-based reading. It's not just correlated with the handheld devices, but prime among those, of course, would be the cell phone, and we do a lot of reading on it. I think as a starting point, we should perhaps lift aside the curtain and say that it's a false correlate to correlate increasing screen-based reading with a descending or demise of print reading. In fact, they're both growing.
Both are growing. Is there any sacrifice on the side of the printed book for the sake of the ebook, though, at all? Because surely some people buy an ebook and it prevents them from – they make a choice, right? They don't buy both.
I'm very optimistic about the prospects for the future of print. You see, print was already the installed base when the digital revolution came along, and of course, it's still benefiting All books are now digital. It's just the final output as to whether or not they are printed to paper or transmitted to a screen. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, I wanted to make that point that we cannot correlate the growth of one with the eclipse of another. And in fact, I would look for screen-based reading in dedicated devices to multiply its market, multiply its popularity, multiply its efficiencies while print also grows.
Okay, so we're actually we'll be, I have to assume then, we'll be reading more.
We see it in the bookselling world, we see it as merely another option. Remember back, I don't know how many years ago, when the internet first came out, the internet was going to kill public libraries. Guess what? Public library use is increasing all over the state. So I just think any kind of reader, whatever kind of screen, it's just another option.
Okay, but how will – I mean, as the electronic revolution has changed the library, has not killed libraries, how does it change a bookstore then? You still have bookshelves with real books.
Right. We still have bookshelves. We do not have the – probably not have the inventory that we used to have, because you don't have to put an e-book. It doesn't take any space. And so what I think bookstores will be doing is diversifying and using that extra space to do different things and bring in even more books.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, what are some other, Gary, some other misconceptions you think, and we have about a minute before we take a break, that we're looking at this perhaps in the wrong way?
Yes, we need to look at the continuing role of print in the context of digital, of its digital delivery. And in fact, there are as many prospects for print as there are for screen-based books.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we're going to come back in just a moment. We're talking about the future of the book with Gary Frost, a book conservator for the University of Iowa Libraries, also Jim McCoy of the University of Iowa Press, and Nancy Simpson Bryce of The Book Vault, an independent bookstore in Oskaloosa. We want to have your opinions, your thoughts on reading habits, how they're changing in the e-book revolution. What's the attraction of e-books over printed books? What are the cons? What don't you like about the e-book you may have purchased recently? Have you stopped buying as many printed books? Let us know about your reading habits, how you think they will change as we move in further into this digital revolution. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Also on Twitter at IPR Talk, the future of the book. When we come back, this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about the rise of the e-book and how that's affecting our printed book, the sales and our love of books. 1-866-780-9100. How will printed books change as e-books evolve in our electronic revolution? 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Before we do go to callers, a quick comment. I wanted to get a little a flurry of opinion from you all about what we see in the electronic readers we have now that just don't quite measure up to the book. What are the cons of the electronic readers right now that people would make people turn keep a regular book? Gary?
Well, to my from my perspective, the mimicry of the print book is a flaw and presumes to doom all the dedicated readers. And yet, dedicated readers, meaning a Nook, a Kindle, a black print, are themselves constrained as an attribute. That is one of the attributes of print, its constraint. The iPad, on the other hand, is kind of a cross reader and crosses many lines of publication, but also of color and
images,
navigation. It's entirely different. So that, in essence, one of the flaws of devices, in my view, is their mimicry, outright mimicry. Because in that respect, they are flawed.
And we mentioned before even the show got started, Gary, you know of what you speak because you have a number of readers. How many?
Oh, yes, but only a half dozen or more, beginning with the soft book and the rocket book. Please go back into the
So, so you're a living – you have sort of a museum of e-books, don't you?
Yes, but I'm one of the few people that also has the equivalent print edition on that I have on the device so that I can actually co-navigate the two delivery modes.
Okay. Lots of people want to take part in our conversation. We want to get to them, 1-866-780-9100, to Dubuque, where Seamus is joining us. Hi, Seamus. What are you thinking about this conversation?
Well, I guess there are benefits and there are drawbacks to the Kindle and other electronic readers as well. But I think being a young person, I'm 25, we're always accustomed to new technologies, and I'd say that a benefit would be that there is lack of paper, so it'd be a greener way to go. But in the other sense, young people spend about an average of 7 hours a day looking at screens, so it's a welcome change to look at something in print, and you don't get the smell of the page when you're looking
right.
at it.
The smell makes a difference to you, huh, Seamus?
Sure.
Let's pick up on the environmental aspect. I saw Nancy's eyes go up here on this. We when we ushered in computers, we thought, oh, there goes all the office paper. We'll save all this. And it turns out that we print and waste more paper than ever. Nancy, what are your thoughts as we think about this as a green technology?
One of my booksellers at Book Vault continually points out to me that paper is a renewable resource. She's from Wisconsin, and she says it's a crop. We grow it. I wonder what's going to happen when these e-readers go down to $20 or $25. We're going to be filling landfills with these plastic things with batteries. I think it's a whole new
like some computer companies will have to have a way to circle them back and recycle some of the products to keep as much out of landfills, I would guess.
The jury's out on life cycle costs because the electronics industry has a lot of toxins that factory settings which are difficult. The server farms require a lot of electricity, and the whole costing out of delivered electronic books has yet to be fully played out. On the other side, there is sustainability in forests. Paper makers plant two trees for every one they consume. Unhappily, all three of us here are perhaps a little bit on the legacy fan team, so that you might not be hearing a really strident defense of e-readers.
I wanted to get to the other point, but Seamus, and move on to another caller here, too. Seamus mentioned about the enjoyment of moving from a screen to a printed book. I see that echoed in the today's Gazette out of Cedar Rapids, a front-page story headlined, "The E-Reader, Iowa College Students Not Exactly Thrilled with Digital Textbooks." And one of the quotes that jumps out at me was that the one of the students says, "I can't stare at a computer that long." So it's nice to go from a screen to and so we have to evolve what, the paper somehow, so that we don't think about it as a screen, and that's not arrived yet. Nancy? You don't know, Gary.
I think you kind of lost me.
I will jump another premise into this, and that is that paper-based and screen-based reading are interdependent. And in fact, that interdependence is even eerie, the way that screen-based reading is a live connectivity, a live experience that's quite mutable, quite changeable in a lot of navigational and legibility aspects. And print, on the other hand, is quite persistent, quite fixed, quite immutable. Now, you could say to yourself, well, that's odd, one fulfilling the function of the other. But it's the interdependence. I'll give you a good example. Papermaking as a technology and printing as a technology developed separately. But when they came together and became interdependent, paper and printing, they created a whole new culture transmission vehicle, the printed book. But neither that outcome was not inherent in the development of those two technologies.
Hmm.
So we could be seeing the same thing, that same interdependence in print and screen.
And so the future of
just
it
emerging.
Is? The future of it is what?
The interdependence will lead to a more multi-platformed reading skill. We'll be able to read, just as we do on TV, quick edits, as well as the Grand Canyon taken in at a glance.
Let's squeeze another call in before we have to take a break. Kai is with us from Ames. Hi, Kai.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. Welcome to our program.
I just wanted to comment. You've been talking a lot about the cultural aspects, but there's also the business and practical aspect, because there are new opportunities for the digital rights management, and I really think that these e-books are going to get brought to more use through the public schools and universities, where you can control the flow of the media and offer students a price break, but they can't resell things.
Hmm. Okay. Let's go to the University of Iowa Press Sales Marketing Director, Jim McCoy.
Yeah, that's certainly true, and that's something that we're looking at. In fact, we're offering a licensing model directly through our website where we sell our own digital editions books, where we can license a otherwise pricey scholarly book that may retail for $30 or $40. We can license that for $10 for 120 days, which is perfect for semester use for a graduate seminar or undergraduate class, and for students who are really burdened by the price of textbooks, something that we produce, which is more in the line of a supplemental textbook, if we can give them a break, and it can help us from a business perspective by building volume, we're happy to do that.
It's early days with that, though, first of all.
Right. But I do think, back to Kai's point, that I think you will see in different genres, but particularly we're looking at in the scholarly genre, how scholars use e-books will shape how we develop books editorially as well as in the production line.
Okay, we have to take a short break. Jim McCoy is with us, Sales and Marketing Director of the University of Iowa Press, Gary Frost, Book Conservator for the University of Iowa Main Library. And we also have Nancy Simpson-Bryce of the independent bookstore in Oskaloosa, The Book Vault. We'd like your opinion about the future of the book. How have your reading habits changed? What are you excited about in this e-revolution? What do you cling to? Do you want to keep about books? What would you hate to lose? Is it more than just a way to read? Is it a part of our culture that we may be losing? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Great to have you with us on this sunny afternoon. This is The Exchange. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we're talking about the future of the book, how it's been impacted by the electronic revolution, our digital revolution. Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk with U.S. Congressman Bruce Braley of Iowa's 1st District about, among other things, the House Democrats' Make It in America National Manufacturing Strategy. Also tomorrow, a conversation with Asif Manvi, the senior Middle East correspondent for Comedy Central's Daily Show. He is coming to Iowa. We'll ask what it's like to make fake news satirizing Islam in such a highly charged political environment. That's tomorrow, Tuesday, at noon on The Exchange. We want to reach out to our listeners now. Book lovers, e-book lovers, e-readers, dedicated readers, we want your opinions in this next half hour. How have your reading habits changed with the e-book revolution? Are you a dedicated book reader, or do you love that old printed book and couldn't imagine getting your information another way? Or do you mix, and why do you mix? When do you use one over the other? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange on at iowapublicradio.org. With us, we have Nancy Simpson Bryce of the Book Vault, in an independent bookstore in Oskaloosa, Gary Frost, a book conservator for the University of Iowa Main Library, and Jim McCoy, sales and marketing director for the University of Iowa Press. Had a lot of calls, so let's go right to our phones. Randy is joining us from Cedar Rapids. Good afternoon, Randy.
Hi there. I never thought that I would buy an e-reader, but I had a chance to get a really good price on one. So I bought a Sony e-reader, and I found out that I really do enjoy it. And a couple of the things I do enjoy is that it's easy on the eyes, and I'm 55, and I'm allowed. It allows me to choose the font size, so I can go from small to extra large.
Don't need that magnifying glass, do you?
No, and it's really great. The problem is that on the extra large, you get about 8 words on the page. But what I have found that I'm doing is I will buy fiction books on for my e-reader, but I still like to buy nonfiction, like a there's a book that I just got called The German Genius, and it's about, you know, Germany in the last, its history of, you know, of philosophy and history and so on. And books like that, I still like to purchase the actual book. But fiction books.
Interesting. Goes along
really
right
well on the e-reader, and I'm finding that I really do enjoy it.
Interesting. You've achieved some sort of integration of both of these reading platforms into your life, and I think this is exactly what Gary Frost was alluding to. Gary, you found a lot, I'm sure, in Randy's comments from Cedar Rapids.
Yes, I did. And, of course, there are distinct genre differences. Romances are migrating quite quickly to handheld devices, and nonfiction works are specifically not. And I think you could characterize this as that there's a difference between a book reading and a book possession. And in the case of nonfiction, the reader is actually doing dealing with the concept of that book in the context of other nonfiction works. Whereas in the simple book reading, you can go from romance to romance to romance, being gratified each time, but with a set anticipation.
Jim McCoy.
Although I must say I don't read romances.
Well, maybe that's a later stage of life, Randy. Let's go to Jim McCoy. I think he wants to get in on this comment. Randy, thank you.
And I would venture to say as well that some of the nonfiction works that are being read in an e-version might be being read on a laptop, not on an e-reader. And particularly for students who might not have the money to buy an e-reader in the first place, but also that's what they use for classes, and it allows them to develop marginalia or annotation as you would with a print book, having a laptop. To read those books on is probably the preferred method in an electronic version at this point.
Here's a tweet from Sarah. Sarah writes, she loves the feel of books in hand and bending the cover back. It's comfortable reading. I can scribble and highlight faster. She says, my Kindle is impersonal. So she obviously has both, but she divides her time up. Well, Nancy, you had a comment?
I was going to first compliment the other gentleman on his choice of readers, because he one of the things I think readers need to be careful of is they need to make sure the reader they buy is able to accept all formats and all platforms. And I am I'm going right toward the Kindle, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Once you buy a Kindle, you have to buy all of your books from Amazon. So if you want any freedom of choice whatsoever, you need to go with a Sony reader, a Nook, a Kobo, something that will accept books from anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a key difference, Jim.
And that's an issue for publishers right now because we're having to pay to convert to four or five different mm-hmm. file formats, and it's really expensive, several hundred dollars for each format. And then you may not even get the quality that you want. It may not flow the way you want. And, you know, for someone who publishes poetry, that's an issue. Line breaks and mm-hmm. stanza breaks are important. So,
Jim, give us a bigger picture about the business model as concerning publishers and authors, where you find yourselves right now and where you hope to go right now. What is
affairs? Something that's important for the public to realize is that 4/5 of a book's cost is created before we ever get to the printing stage. Development and production and typesetting, all these things. And there is an expectation building in the marketplace that any kind of e-product, but even an e-book, is going to be at a certain price point. And I'm interested to see if this is going to be sustainable. Hmm. And so one sense, I hope it is because it will build volume and make the book more accessible to more people. But another, as just coming from a business perspective, I don't think the margins are going to allow it. You look at Amazon right now, and they're artificially subsidizing that $9.99 price point. Most of those books are published with the retail price at the same point as their hard copy cousin. So whether or not this is sustainable, especially once ebooks begin to cannibalize print sales, is a different issue.
Let's go to Robert in Cedar Rapids. Thanks for waiting. Robert, what's on your mind? I think you want to talk about cost as well while we're on that point.
Yes. I have a concern, and what's kept me out of the market so far is, one, the original cost of the device. I mean, even with the Kindle coming down to $150, that's the cost of 15 to 20 paperback books right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
go ahead.
Another would be the aftermarket. When I get done with a book, I oftentimes want to give it to a friend, or if I didn't like the book, maybe I want to go sell it to Half Price Books or whatever. And I'm sure the publishers like the fact that I can't transfer it after I own it, but as a user, I don't.
So Robert, if we had an ebook or a reader, let's say, that was $40 or $50, would that suit you? Are you okay with that?
Well, full disclosure, I'm kind of one of the big fans of that smell of the paper book, too. But
smell of the – we get a lot of Gary, as a – Gary Frost as a book conservator, what are people talking about when they're talking about the smell of books?
Well, we've heard the two key words, smell and feel. And, of course, those are euphemisms for – something far deeper, far more embedded, that goes all the way back to primate dexterity, goes all the way back to an ergonomic of comprehension where the hands prompted the mind. You ever notice that if you are reading a book and you've read something, you can remember where it was on the page?
Right. It was in the upper right-hand corner. And then you only look at the upper right-hand corner if you want to flip through and find it again.
Haptic. And haptic is the study of touch as a mode of communication. Haptic of print. But now, equal disclosure, think of the haptics of touchscreen. The pinch and the slide and the scroll that you can do with your fingers. Well, that's an entirely new electronic version of the same embedded hand-to-mind pathway.
Interesting comments. Robert, thank you for your comment from Cedar Rapids. Let's go to Dan, who is on the road near Ames, I believe. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. How you doing?
We're doing fine. What do you have to chip in here?
Well, it had to do with basically expensive technology and the changing, the rapid changing of technology. And I just, if we can think back a few short years to the movie and the music industries, and from Beta to VHS to now DVDs, and then from, you know, 48s to 33s to CDs, and then I just worry about the collections that people collect with books, where do they go? And if
right.
you can't have the technology to purchase the technology to read them, because the 5 years went by and everybody has some new gimmick, I think we lose a little bit of things there. The book is endless and it only has to be preserved.
Interesting, Dan. What happens to book collectors and book collection as a hobby, as a thrill? And enthusiasm. Who wants to tackle that? Gary again. As
well,
a book conservator, you wouldn't.
We're
know
often
that.
Told that books take space. Well, it's true. Physical books take physical space. And in fact, that's a prerequisite of the medium itself. For those that would deny space to print books, I would only say that it would be equally fair to deny electricity, device display, and connectivity to e-books. Because those are fundamental. In other words, there are prerequisites and space is required. What I'm concerned about as a conservator is the decline of the status of the books, where we begin to commodify them, store them in warehouses by five sizes, and literally eclipse the long tradition of librarianship and human classification of books.
So the warehousing of books, or what do you mean there? Where are we going that you don't like with physical books?
Well, the books that are euphemistically lesser used, and it's true that a paper book is infrequently used in a research library, are being relocated into, because they do take space, into remote storage and high-density storage. That's a side point here. The issue is that every access of a book on the screen is, in fact, a reading of that book.
Mm.
And it is the print version that is the authenticator of that reading. The screen version is the indexical, the indexing, self-indexing, the one self-authenticating, the other self-indexing. I know this sounds abstract.
Right.
But
I'm following you.
Again,
yeah.
It plays to the interdependence of the two. It is important that we can search and parse any six words in the print legacy on Google.
How is the electronic, the e-book, the dedicated readers changing the nature of the printed book in a bookstore, Nancy, in a publisher's world or in a conservator's world? Are we making books cheaper so they can compete $9.99? Are we making them more expensive so they're really differentiated from an electronic version, Nancy?
I think right now we're at the beginning, really, of the wave, the tsunami. And right now we've got everything dumped into this big kettle and it's all washing around and we don't know what's going to come out. At the same time, new technologies will certainly be developing. We have knowledge of a technology called Blio that will be released probably the first of next year, which will enable electronic readers to be completely in color, to be very interactive with a touch screen. You will be able to play videos of the pictures. And so I think there's so much coming. I think we're just kind of in kindergarten.
You're kind of in a mess there in the independent bookstore world, and you're waiting for things to shift out. Do you see how things will shift out? Sift out, sorry.
I still see the book as the main thing, but you know, I'm that age. I've got a house full of books.
Right.
I don't know about my 2-year-old grandson how he will learn. I think. Yeah, it'll just sift out. We have to be nimble on our feet. Publishers, booksellers, we have to be nimble. We have to be ready to change.
Who are the who determines in the publishing world or reading world most how this landscape is changing at present? Amazon?
Yes. Well, and I won't say specifically Amazon, but they're certainly having an impact. And you can make an argument they're the ones who started this whole wave. But I think what's interesting about it is it's people who are not traditionally in the book business. It is Sony and Apple and Amazon, who's been in the book business but is really in the retail business, Google. People are coming at this from a non-traditional publishing and bookselling point of view. And as Nancy can tell you, no more traditional industry exists than publishing. It is very antiquated in its approaches and its business models. And I'm not particularly proud of that, but that's what we've worked with. And really, it's like people from the outside are coming in and telling us, this is what you need to do. And we're having to figure out how to do it.
And they've got the lever there.
Well, they've got the engineers and they've got the venture capital and they've got the ability to create these things. And publishers simply don't and they won't.
Is there some resentment among publishers?
Because I don't think so. I think there's a lot of acceptance that we're not going to get into the IT business, which is what this is in a lot of ways. And there's no way we could compete. I think when it comes to dollars and cents, there's probably some resentment out there that these vendors are dictating the terms to the publishers and not the other way around, which is traditionally the way it's been. And you know, recently there was a big blow up with the Andrew Wiley agency cutting an exclusive deal with Amazon as far as selling, and things like that. I think will bubble up, or Macmillan's feud with Amazon. Where lines will be drawn and these bubbling resentments will come out. But by and large, I think people are happy. Right now, this is auxiliary income to most of us. Hmm. And we're happy that people are reading, and we don't care what format it's in.
Just a few minutes left. I want to get to a call and email perhaps. Jim is from Cedar Falls. Jim, hi. We don't have much time. What's on your mind?
Just wanted to contribute one thing that I've been doing recently, and that is to actually download from the web resource called the Gutenberg Project, the electronic form of various public domain books, and then printing them myself. And I've learned kind of some basic bookbinding skills and kind of making my own books off of the electronic version.
So you can actually recreate a version of a book that's several hundred years old?
The ones that I've done, I think they've someone has actually transcribed the contents of the book into the computer file format, HTML. And from that, I'm able to rearrange the pages and print out into signatures and actually bind a book that I can sit and read.
Hmm. Interesting.
I wondered if maybe that would be a different delivery modality, that if people wanted to have, like, on-demand printing of books with their own choice of binding or something like that, it would be a way to save the storage of a bunch of excess copies that people just print out what they want. But
so, so in the same way you have a printer, you have sort of bookmaker at home. You download it, and it prints it. It binds it. Interesting.
Right. Actually, that's something publishers have been doing for a while that we just don't advertise. It's called print-on-demand or short-run digital printing, and it allows you to – and it's particularly useful for the type of publishing we do – to do very short-run quality imprints without having to hold a bunch of inventory.
Here, thank you, Jim, from Cedar Falls. An email to wind up our hour here with some concluding thoughts from Adam. Adam writes, I'm sure it's been compared before, but the Kindle and the iPad are quite reminiscent of a reading pad used in the Star Trek series. However, he says, it is worth pointing out that the characters on Star Trek frequently were filmed reading books in addition to their iPads or their pads. The future clearly holds both in store. My concern with the e-books are the intense amount of time the eyes are exposed to the luminous lights of that of the computer screen. Have there been studies on the effect of e-readers on the eyes?
They're too new.
We don't know what the long-term effects are because they've been around only for a few years. We have just a couple minutes left. Some concluding remarks.
What's not to like about more reading, and what's not to like about having screen versions of book readings and print versions of book possession with all of that together, so that the mix that you referred to is really the secret here for a young student to look at the interplay and interdependence of print and screen.
Interesting, Gary, because from a book conservator's perspective, I wouldn't have guessed that you'd be so happy on the future prospects of the book. Interesting.
There's no life and death here. There's no up and down. There's a mediation going on that's very dynamic.
Okay. What else are you looking most forward to, Jim, in the coming years, quickly?
Well, I would just respond to Nancy, and I have a young son as well, and you've mentioned your grandson. Most studies I've seen recently by National Association of College Stores, for one, and book industry study groups have said that the generation that's currently coming through first and second grade is going to be the first generation that really embraces the e-reader, because they're the group that will be brought up with e-books as a study tool.
Okay, very good. Jim McCoy, Gary Frost, and Nancy Simpson Bryce, I want to thank you for coming into our studio today. We'll continue this conversation as books and e-readers evolve. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer, Catherine Perkins, and Lindsay Moon. Technical support as well from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.